What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we'll be talking about Amazon's first ever color Kindle, the Kindle Color Soft. Okay. You could have just said Kindle Color. You could have just said Kindle Color, and I think we would have gotten it. We're going to talk a bit about, again, gadget naming and what the hell is going on there. We're going to talk a bit about that. I've got thoughts on the Meta Quest 3S, which I reviewed over last week. Gave it a pretty high score. And there's a bunch of news. iPad Mini was just kind of dropped. The Tesla Robotaxi stuff happened after our show last week, so we've got thoughts on all that stuff. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Okay, Sherlyn, I don't think anybody really expected a major Amazon event this week, but yet it happened. They kind of did one quietly because they brought you in, they showed off the devices, and then they were able to just, like, you know, dump all the news. Tell us what happened. You went to see Amazon. Let us know what happened in that experience.
So those of us who are, like, seasoned tech industry watchers know that Amazon usually has an event later in the year, just like everyone else, Apple, Meta, etc. And so I wouldn't say we didn't expect it. We kind of were expecting an event, but I don't know that we were expecting necessarily an event just for Kindles.
Right.
And this happened to be a non-live streamed event. It was basically an in-person press briefing, I would say, where Panos Panay, who, you know, just joined Amazon last year from Microsoft, basically took the stage and did his thing. And Devendra, I remember very vividly you and I together at that event where he launched the Surface Duo and Neo. Mm-hmm, and you remember the setting, right? You remember it was like a lot of couches.
It was Flatiron, a lot of couches. Yeah, really chill, right? Tech space. Yeah.
It was really like comfy vibes. And this will tie into your name thing later on. But like, it's very like this, the color scheme this time around was like very soft, neutral pastels and like very like, fall girl aesthetic, you know?
I mean, that's very Amazon Pacific Northwest aesthetic. It's very much that green.
And
you
it's
know,
not a huge yeah. move from Microsoft's Redmond, Washington campus to be in Amazon's PNW sort of space as well. So I can see how Panos and Amazon vibe that way. So anyway, I bring that up kind of to say it was very familiar to me immediately, where I was like, wait, this was the Surface Duo event, except for like different colors.
You entered the Panos vibe is what it was. He cultivates a vibe. He probably orchestrated. He chose the couches. He probably chose everything. Yeah. I'm joking, but
No. I was like, you definitely had a say in this. And then he was just like, oh, we're together with the team. I was like, all right. We did, like you said, right? We all showed up to watch Panos talk about the Kindles, and they launched 4 new Kindles. So honestly, I knew the event was going to happen. I knew more or less it was going to be about Kindle as a product, but I didn't think there would be 4 new Kindles.
Yeah.
I think everyone was just anticipating the first color Kindle, which would be a bit slow to the game for Amazon. That's why everyone's kind of waiting for it, right? If you look at the rest of the industry, we've got like Kobo has already made color ink. We've got TCL, who you don't really think about as an e-paper tablet maker, but they have the Next Paper tablet, has their own take on e-ink, and it's got color, it's got a high refresh rate. And we just recently discussed and reviewed the Remarkable Paper Pro. So Declan in our chat is saying, Panos Panay is one of the few tech execs that can truly pull off the old Steve Jobs reality distortion field in a presentation. And I have to say, I fully agree.
He was raised in that era, right? Like that was his prototype.
Yeah.
I mean,
so like you mentioned at the top of this episode that I did speak to Panos afterwards in an interview, and I wrote up an interview article on Engadget.com. You can read it, where I kind of like tried to impress upon the readers what the Panos experience is, because it is an experience. And it's an experience that's like charming to a point where you're like, oh, wow, I'm listening to him talk about his daughter again, his family, how they set at their family
table. His daughter,
table.
Sophia, we know her name.
And Bella, and he's got 3 girls and a boy or something, and they sat at the table before he made that decision to move over to Amazon. You know, like there's just how excited his family was when they heard about the Kindle product, you know? Of all the products that Amazon makes, they don't care. They only care that the kids,
yes,
you know,
Papa,
eyes lit
no
up.
More surfaces. Kindles. We are a Kindle family now.
So here's the most Steve Jobs moment I felt when after like a third of the presentation, like he had said very early on, he was like, I'm only going to talk for 38 minutes or something like that. And I was like, cool. 10 minutes in, he's still talking about like background story, like his like hero origins. And I was like, okay. But you don't feel impatient because of that whole like, you're being lulled into this hypnotic state of like, yeah, he's really like making eye contact with everyone. He calls out all these people by name in the audience. And at some point he goes, okay, he's going to move on to the news now. And like, I'm an impatient bitch. And I'm like, usually like, hurry up. But no, at this point he's like, okay, and I want to show you something. He reaches into his back pocket and he pulls out the new 12th gen like baby Kindle, the entry level Kindle, which is a 6-inch tablet. And this is the first thing he shows up. And I was like, okay, that's giving me Steve Jobs pulling a MacBook out of the manila envelope.
Can I mimic exactly how this probably went? Sherlyn, was he like, ahead. I want to talk about Kindle. I want to talk about the story of Kindle and how we feel about stories, words, writing. We could give it to Jeremy Strong. Like, I love Panos. Like, as a product guy, I love talking with him. But give him like Jeremy Strong from Succession having the real like Kendall Roy hyper focused vibes of like where he's like always a little agitated and you're like little you're intense, buddy. You're really intense about this. It's very much that.
The vibe I was trying to communicate in my article is that like this man is mysterious in a way because he seems so open, he seems so soft and inviting, and yet you don't actually learn a lot. You don't. There's this very like little bit of conflict as I was writing my article. I was like, wait, it's so welcoming and inviting and soft and whatever, but then I don't quite know what I'm writing about, like this man, like, you know. And so it's just a bit of a like conflict in that. Anyway,
have you ever talked to like a magician, Sherlyn? Like like the magicians that try to hypnotize you, and it's very much like you're in,
they have
the really intense eyes, and they're like, yes, pay attention, don't look over here, don't pay attention to what I'm saying, and don't like process everything else. There's a bit of that too, and that is the Steve Jobs like showmanship too.
Exactly. It is showmanship. It's nice to see that again. I think it's been a while since I had seen that. But anyway, all that is just to say that it can make it easy to overlook some of the product's flaws.
Sure.
Just because you're so like distracted by all the like charisma, really, right? This man is kind of the tech Rizzler. I am Gen Z.
Oh man, you wish. Come on.
I know, I wish. I will say, like, with him pulling the like entry-level Kindle out of his back pocket like that, I was like, oh my gosh, that thing is so small and so cute, and I really like it. Forgetting that I've had one myself for like about 10 years now, that is basically the same size.
It's the same size.
It's the same effing size.
Basically the same resolution. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, they've made a new thing that now fits. No, I've had one. Like, literally, it sits on my shelf right now, and I've had it since 2012, so great. Nothing much new about the entry-level Kindle. I will say there's new colors that are cute. There's the page turns are faster. Basically, they've refreshed the internals to just make it feel more responsive, I think. They've upgraded the screen a little bit with the like PPI and stuff. And then they moved on to the next product, which Panos does call his like favorite child in the presentation, and then also kind of like says he's guilty because you're not supposed to have a favorite child. I'm like, I get it, but it's also my favorite of the Kindle.
He probably
products.
Speaks more favorably of that than his own children too, because whenever he mentions his kids, he's like,
oh, maybe he's guilty.
I wish my daughter was better at the piano. She could be better at the piano if she stuck with her Surface more.
Favorite child is. The Kindle Scribe is his favorite child. And then throughout the presentation, he calls it a 2-in-1. And I'm like, bro, come on, stop. Just because you came from the Surface team.
He can't stop saying it, truly. Like, it's ingrained in him. He helped invent the concept of the 2-in-1, basically. So it's like, yeah, he can't stop.
It was really, I mean, I was like, wait, what? It took me out of that distortion field a little bit. And then I was like, all right, I'll let him get by with it for now. And then I asked him.
Wait, what are the two? What are the two?
So yeah.
If it's a
2-in-1. So the 2-in-1 is the Kindle Scribe. It's a reader and a writer tablet. You know what I mean? Like, it does two things. And according to Panos, he does two things, and it does those two things very well, according to him. And like, they both have to be like great standalone experiences. I'm just quoting my own like interview piece now. And it was, Declan says in the chat, Panos would tell you that you are his favorite child, and you'd believe him for a few seconds.
In that moment. You were the most important. He's actually a very good politician. Like when they talk to you, you feel like you're the most important person in the world. And that is like a specific skill, which I find kind of terrifying. Yeah. Honestly. But yeah.
So the Kindle Scribe, it is a larger tablet. It is meant to take on the likes of the Remarkable, the books, tablets you can write on as well. And it doesn't have color still. But it is cheaper than the Remarkable Paper Pro, which is a color writing tablet. For that reason, I think.
Does this require a subscription? Because the Remarkable kind of does to work well.
No, it doesn't. But the main changes here, I mean, in addition to some small hardware tweaks, like, you know, they've changed the borders to be like white bezels now. And then the edge, I have an original Kindle Scribe that's like always by my side, by the way. And so the like column, sort of the width of the grip on the side of the display is a little thinner on the new Kindle Scribe. And then the pencil itself, that comes with the scribe that you write with, its tip is kind of like more rubberized now to feel like an actual eraser.
That's cool. Are you a scriber, Shilin? Like in your day to day, you're the one always jotting down.
Devendra, I've got like all our team's to dos on this. You know what I mean? Like I write. I like to write. So I'm like a huge Kindle Scribe or writing tablet nerd in general. And so the new Kindle Scribe. So like I said, those are the main hardware updates. The biggest changes come in the software. And like you said, Devendra, it doesn't require a software subscription unless you're not yet an Amazon app user, then you need an Amazon app, you know what I mean?
But you don't need to pay for Prime to like get the syncing, do you? Like yeah, that's the thing about Remarkable.
Yeah. Okay. I know. It's so annoying, right? Like I don't know Remarkable software enough to tell you if one for one they're like better in terms of software. But Amazon, when I originally reviewed the Kindle Scribe, I knew that it was lacking in some places. For example, when I reviewed the original Scribe, they hadn't made all the updates they have made over the years, which, by the way, it has been years. 2022 was when we got the original Scribe. But now they have. So when you write in a notebook, it will, you know, sync across all your devices, but you still can't edit them across devices, which is a huge desire of mine. Like, I really want you to be able to edit on my phone's app as well as on the Scribe. Anyway.
Sure.
One of my big complaints was that in the original Scribe, you can technically sort of write on books, but you can't. Like, you have to go open the floating toolbox and then add a sticky note, write in the sticky note, and then when you X out of the sticky note, it just disappears, and there's a little tiny little symbol on the page to say, oh, you left a note here, and you have to, like, tap. So it's not the most integrated or intuitive. With the new Kindle Scribe, you can just directly underline or highlight on a book.
Just start writing. Just start scribbling.
You can also just start writing, exactly. Okay. So here's the thing, though. Once you start writing, a square appears. So you're not writing over the text freehand. You still the only things that really interact with the text or are appearing more integrated are the highlights and the underlines. Everything else kind of happens within this box that they call Active Canvas. So Active Canvas is a resizable sticky note, basically. And when you start writing on the words of the page actually move around to accommodate your writing and the box that it's in. And then it just, you can resize it and the words will reflow around it. The reason Amazon does this instead of just letting you write on a page is because according to their research, the people really want the text to be anchored to where they left it, where they wrote it, right? Which brings up the issue of what happens when you resize the font after you've written your note. It will disappear. You might circle the word, you know, hello, and when you resize the font, the circle might only stay around the letters H and E, for example. So this is their workaround. I know that in other apps or other software by things like Kobo, for example, I talked to Valentina about this, and she's like, yeah, you know, you can circle directly on Kobo content, but yet when you do resize Kobo, like the circle doesn't stay at the exact same place. I get why Amazon has to do this.
Yeah. Because the Kindle is also very much about like text formatting too, right? And the people who like books, like I want to make sure my text is justified properly and everything too. So it's not just like a computer screen. Did they say anything about publishers being annoyed about people like digitally scribbling into books? Like, I don't know if that could be a thing.
Yeah, I was concerned about that too. That's one of the things I like was wondering is part of the issue. But basically this feature works with all content, right? All Kindle viewable content. The only place that like Active Canvas will struggle is like a PDF, because PDFs are a locked format, so they don't actually flow to move around your scribbles. But everything else, as long as the font is resizable, it will be, you know, it will be able to work with this reflow thing. So then there's other software features, by the way. There's the, like I said, the Active Canvas, the highlighting and circling. There's a new expandable margin that will only be available in early 2025, but you can use that to write in the margin of a book. So it's really interesting. I think, I don't know if I will use it, but if you're like revising or like, you know, studying for a test or whatever, and you're using a Kindle and your textbook is on your Kindle, then like there's these margins that come up, and the margin will never run out of space. Like it's infinite scroll basically in the margin. And you can kind of resize it. But again, like the details are all my hands on. This is also the first Kindle product to have AI features. And so in the notebook section of the Kindle Scribe, where you're just basically like freehand writing anything on top of an existing book, you can like write endless copious notes and then get the AI to either summarize your handwritten notes, meaning the system has to go in, convert your writing to like it machine recognizable text, and then, you know, summarize it for you using AI. The other one is it's called refined writing, which is, in my opinion, a more intense take on Apple's handwriting assist in Apple Intelligence, which is your chicken scratch is so hard to read, we're just gonna like reformat the whole thing for you. So if you've written like your to-do list, but you've got like chunks of text in between it, then it will just straighten everything out, put it in this cursive font that they've come up with. And you can select your font, and you can select what they do with it. You can append it to the notebook as an addition. You never lose your original writing if you don't want to. I think it's interesting. It still has its limits, though. Like, for example, I'm the sort of person that writes not in one single column, but I like split the page into quadrants, and it just doesn't work for that. It will do
we,
something.
We have to look at your notes, Sherlyn, because it's a real peek into how everyone's brain works, right?
Let me like, find
notes
one.
Specifically. Yeah, let's take a look. I will say, did you ask them if the AI stuff, is it on device or is it like Amazon cloud stuff?
Yeah, so the AI is processed in the cloud, but it's encrypted, fully encrypted end-to-end, according to Amazon
them. But that means it could be coming to anything eventually, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So for the people on the live stream, I am showing right now my a typical note that I write for, you know, planning out work at Engadget. So I'm planning out what Apple reviews are usually done in a year so that I can like find who the right person is in future to work on these. And so I don't write in one single column. I've split this up into five mini rows.
This is very logical.
On the page.
I
don't know how people in their brains think, but I don't think in one, right? My brain thinks in clouds.
Sure.
So the refined writing is not going to work with this. But other than that, there's not other, you know, AI features. There's no other real major significant updates, and the price of the Kindle Scribe is the same as before. So,
and they're not like AI summarizing books or anything yet, which is, I think, the worry some people have.
Well, they have,
They
have the AI at work summarizing reviews, right, in the Amazon store. So,
yeah, I mean, that's actually pretty useful because I don't want to scroll down through all the reviews. So, that's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, they're 10,000 reviews of this product, and then the Amazon summary up top is like, people like the design, yada yada yada, but they're worried about the, you know, long-term usability or something, or the build quality. That's all useful stuff. We gotta talk about, Trillin, like, I know you love the Scribe. You're a Scribe girl. There is a new Paperwhite, which we will talk about as well, but I wanna talk about the Kindle Color Soft.
First of
all, it's called the Kindle Color Soft. Did Panos give you, like, I'm sure that name probably came like directly from him.
This one I take issue with, because haven't you heard of like previous Kindle names like Paperwhite, WhisperSync? Yeah. You know, they have a tendency to put words together and call it a thing. You know what I mean?
But those words describe something, right?
Paperwhite. Okay. Color is something.
Color soft.
The paper color is white, paper soft. White. The color is soft, color soft. Like, come on.
It's Kindles have always had like soft white color. Was it one of those things where they're like, did they do market research and was like, Kindle color, too harsh. Need more syllables. We need to really soften this name? How do we soften this name for the consumer market?
Maybe they're just gearing up for the version where it's neon and it's color hard. I don't know.
What? That is the all neon one.
Oh my god, Tom Rogers in the chat says because he's from Microsoft.
I think that's, was that a, oh, that could have been, that's also part of the thing. I was thinking, is this like a Microsoft dig? Are you like just trolling
Microsoft right now? Color hard, I'm dead. Maybe the color hard is their coloring book.
Color hard is the coloring book. That's where the e-ink doesn't go exactly where you want it to. So it's just really tough. But no, I think this feels like a Panos joint, but it also feels like a bit of a Microsoft troll. Like, oh, you wanna dump my vision and start doing AI powered surfaces? No, thank you. we'll just bring part of your name over here. So,
look,
okay.
My opinion. Okay, so first of all, Declan in the chat says soft makes me think it'll be all pastels and washed out. So
yes.
I've seen this in person. To be clear, so of all the four Kindles that were launched this week, the Paperwhite and the entry level Kindle are both going to be available like today. Like you can buy them already. You can ship. They will be shipping. The Kindle Scribe, I believe, is available in December, and then the ColorSoft is available on October 30th. So I've seen it. You can't quite otherwise have an experience with it yet. So unless you were at this hands-on event, right? And according to what I saw, I checked out, there's a lot of book covers, right, that you can see in color, and they were very pretty. There's that muted effect that is like the difference between, you know, LCD and OLED, right? Like the difference between e-ink and LCD. So
does it... It kind of looks like, remember, like color newspapers, right? I don't know. Think back, kids.
Right, exactly.
Like what color newspapers look like. Is it that kind of washed out color? Yeah.
Yes, it is. But I would say even color newspapers are a little bit more colorful than what I saw. And it could just be what I was looking at. So I saw a bunch of books that they had already. And then with the one color soft I spent more time on and held on to, I pulled up the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic anthology. And... everything looked a little muted, but I couldn't tell if it was the art style because it was like a bit more of an origin story. I don't know why Leonardo was evil. I don't know why Splinter was like, I mean, Splinter, Shredder was all black, right? Wait, who's Splinter? Is the rat?
Splinter's
Shredder
the rat.
Is the black.
Come on.
Robot.
He's the ninja, cyborg. Ninja man. Yeah.
Ninja man. So Splinter's coloring was also kind of strange in that. And I again, couldn't just tell you if it was the comic itself presented that way or if the color soft made it look like, I don't know, newspaper that was 2 days old. So
I think I'm just looking between the images I see that Amazon provides and also like your picture of it too. Like it just, it's one of those things. It's the difference between like a really matte, cheap comic book paper and maybe like a more expensive, glossier one that you'd find in a graphic novel. So it does look muted. I think it is.
Yeah.
It's a good observation.
You can see the pictures in our hands-on, and I'd be happy to share even more pictures anywhere, honestly. I might just put some on my Instagram, but that's the trick is like when you upload a picture, the thing gets compressed and like, you know, you never know what color edits people have done to bump up things. So my best explanation right now is, yeah, like Devendra said, it's basically like newspaper color. But maybe just, again, and I think the size of the thing was part of the reason too. Like the comic is not the size that I'm used to. So to be explicit here, the color soft is basically the Paperwhite with color. So, so the specs are basically one-to-one. It's the Paperwhite Signature Edition, but with color soft technology. And so they've used
8-inch screen, right, on those?
Yeah. 7. Yeah, 7-inch. It went from 6.8 to 7. Okay. Yeah, so 7-inch screen. And it's small, right? So when you're looking at the Mutant Ninja Turtles on that, even their like outlines kind of feel like they're bleeding a bit more into the environment, so it feels a little more like hazy, I guess. Couldn't tell you. So, but it did look like color, right? And here's the thing, Amazon was more focused on making sure that while they introduce color, that the black and white experience didn't suffer. Because often it happens that way where, like, you know, you turn a product into color and then the entire battery life dies because everything's being rendered in color, even the black and white, right? So that's weird. So I think they were working to make sure they had the same pixel density. So yes, there's 300 ppi on this thing. And there's also the black and white experience. The page turns are still as fast as on the Paperwhite Signature Edition. We are going to get to the Paperwhite very briefly and quickly, but I think... I want to point out that the Paperwhite, by the way, has wireless charging. I don't know if it's the first ever for a Kindle, but it's like really cool. You can just leave it on the stand.
That's cool.
And it has the ColorSoft, compared to the signature Paperwhite or the new Paperwhite, has 2 months battery life instead of 3 months. So the color is affecting the battery a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2 months is still plenty, in my opinion.
That's still a ton. Like, you could charge that, take it on vacations, feel good. I want to point out, I'm looking at their like stat table here. The ColorSoft, 300 ppi for black and white, 150 ppi for color.
Yeah. Yeah, so and that could be part there. Of why I saw that sort of delta in the experience of color as well, right? Like, I don't know what PPI newspapers are printed on, but, you know, it might have something to do with that as well.
I think newspapers were down to like 72. I don't know. Mm. Don't quote me on this. I've not looked at my print specs in a while.
We will go to Wikipedia.
How did the experience look to you? Did it feel like world-changing, Trillin? I'm also surprised that Panos didn't call the ColorSoft, literally like a first thing ever for Kindle, his favorite child. He called the Scribe the $400 Scribe, which not as many people are going to buy.
Because it's a two-in-one, Devendra, come on.
Yeah. And it has a stylus. It does have a stylus. And it has a
Okay.
I know how this works. Yeah.
I will point out that if you think a little bit about this, and I did ask Panos this, right? I was like, look, it's not a stretch of the... I was like, why the ColorSoft? Why give it a brand new name? Like, is it a new product line on its own? Because it's not a stretch of the imagination to think that you just future Kindles get integrated color. Like, especially if there's parity in their features, right? Like, if the color doesn't drain battery too much, it doesn't make the device significantly slower, that, like, why not just put color to every Kindle product?
Well, it's, Kindle, I mean,
especially.
I can imagine, like, Kindles are such weird devices, right? Because these things have been around forever. They're pre-iPhone. Like, e-ink is the technology. I remember when it was coming out. I was like, oh, this is really cool, because I love the idea of a device that just gives me... No, I'm not looking at a computer screen. I'm not looking at an LCD. I'm looking at just something that is easier on my eyes. That technology never really scaled down in price, I think, because it's really just Amazon and Kobo and a couple companies really tapping into it. Meanwhile, LCDs got super cheap, and like the actual color screens got super cheap. I could see color going to like the Scribe, because taking color notes will be super useful. But the base Kindle, they want to keep that sucker cheap. And the black and white, I think, for a lot of people. Yeah, but you're right. It'll likely appear in more things. I'm just really interested. So you chatted with Panos. What is his vision for the Kindle line? How is he kind of taking ownership of this product at this point?
Yeah, I think the main takeaway I got from it is that, well, a few choice quotes I pulled out for my article are, I said, what's up next and what are the challenges for the Kindle Scribe? And he said the challenge is to not make it a Swiss Army knife. Pretty much know when to stop, right?
Right,
and,
right.
He wants to just do those two things right, the writing and the reading, and then kind of leave it at that, which I think is fine. I don't think that's a problem. And he says he wants to keep it simple, right? He talked about keeping it simple. So I think for the Kindle Scribe, that's a really good idea. And I asked a little bit about, like, I see, you know, AI being stuffed into everything everywhere. He mentioned that, you know, at Amazon, according to him, that they have this huge focus on customers, which I'm like, okay.
Sure.
I mean, I guess their merchants are also their customers.
Yeah.
So they look at what the customers do to, you know, refine their products, but they are also trying to predict what customers want. And to me, when you try too hard to do that, it gets a bit dicey. It makes me nervous, because people can tend to swing too far in, you know, certain directions. So like with AI, there's a tendency to do that in the industry, right? And so Panos's approach there is to be like more measured, to kind of like watch and wait and see a bit. And to that end, I don't think he stuffed they've not seemed to stuff the Kindle Scribe with too many AI things, right? It's just two features right now. I'm not quite sure if like it's going to be more in the future. I really hope not. I don't know if that there's a need, unless they find the right one. You know what I mean? So,
Mark Dell says, any hints? Oh, okay, go ahead.
And Mark Dell in the chat says they're focusing on what customers want, and they picked AI? Question mark.
They picked AI. Well, customers want like summaries of their scribbles, which I think is legitimate. Actually, like if I'm taking a lot of notes, sure, give me a quick glance, a look at that. That would be cool. I just want synchronized notes. That's really, I want to do handwritten notes.
I want that. I told him that. Yeah. About.
Yeah. I want to disappear in something, Evernote or whatever. My question to you: Did you talk to him about like, okay, well, these are the Kindles. There are also a lot of tablets over to Amazon. Like, did you get to like jab him about any other devices or other things he's thinking of working on at Amazon?
Yeah, Mm-hmm. So to quickly talk about the synchronized notes before I answer that question. So I mentioned, I was like, I am a heavy Kindle Scribe user myself, and that like my big number one wish list item is to be able to not only sync notes across devices, but also be able to edit them across devices. Like the Kindle app on my phone is basically a writing tablet. Why can't I edit my notes in there? Anyway, the sense I got from him was, yeah, we know your list, and yeah, we hear you. Basically, I think if they come up with this in future, they have to pay me a royalty. So anyway, the other thing is to the other products that he's working at Amazon, he oversees a department that includes products like, he named all of them, right? Smart home products like the Alexa ones.
Oh, yeah.
Echo products. And then he mentioned Fire TVs, Fire tablets. But two things that jumped out at me, he also said robo taxis and satellite products. And I'm like, right. There's also, you know, don't forget they have Blink, Ring, and Eero. They have a lot of things that Panos, you know, is generally overseeing as well, right? So, what he obviously can't talk about future roadmap on record with me, but he did
robots?
Say like it's
robots. Yeah,
yeah. I was asking about that too. There's not much he could really say. But he goes on to add that like it's about seeing how these things play together to create like a user experience that's more, I don't know, complete, I guess. So
I guess that is one thing. Like we've covered a lot of these Amazon events. I think for years it's just seemed like a sort of like batshit thing where they throw a lot of stuff at the wall. Here's a drone that can fly around your home and, you know, monitor your home. Here's a maybe a robot. I don't know. There's a lot of things that they bring up and we're like, what are you talking about, Amazon? Who wants this? Why did you create this? And I feel like they never really had a good product guiding hand from somebody who actually understood consumer electronics. So at the very least, that's something Panos can do. And I'm sure he's like doing that. But, you know, Amazon is a company that is out there selling, I think, more laptops than probably any other store around, right? What are they thinking about? PCs are back. AI PCs. Where is the Amazon laptop? You know?
Don't give Panos ideas. He will make the Amazon Surface. Come on. Like,
he will call it the Amazon table.
Yeah.
The Amazon table. It's a
No, he'll call it the Amazon 2-in-1.
It's a laptop. Yeah.
I don't know how subtly I did this, but I felt like I gave him a little bit of shade for the Surface Duo and Neo. I mentioned it explicitly in my article, but I'm just like,
that was
at some point, because, my friend and friend of the Engadget podcast, Michael Fisher, asked me before my interview to ask Panos if he'll ever make a Kindle foldable. And I was like, yeah, Panos, tell me more. And then Panos was like, it's an interesting concept or something. He said like that. And I went, well, it's not like you're a stranger to things that fold. And then he's like, yeah. He's like,
was he like, you shot me right in the heart? Because was like, that was the last major Microsoft event that I can remember where they really showed off new stuff. And then after that, it was just like your pandemic happened, but also kind of disaster for those products. Yeah, I just saw the news that the Surface Duo 2 got one Android update and it's effectively dead. They're just not going to do anything more with it.
After Panos left, they were like, we don't need to work on this anymore.
Well, I'm wondering if it's even directly tied. Is like, was the word from up high is like, these things are not selling, Panos, and we're not doing well with them, so they're dead. And I wonder if that was the thing. Because when he jumped, it was a very like surprising immediate thing. We were expecting
him at
the AI event last year. At Microsoft. Yeah. And the news that he left happened like a week or two before that. So,
or like the day, like before.
It wasn't the day. It was like a week. But it was definitely like there was drama there. What was the drama that happened at the Microsoft side? And was Amazon just like, hey, buddy, we have devices. We could use some help and, you know, maybe pay him even more because it's Amazon. That is a really, I don't know, maybe that story will get told someday, but it's a shame.
Write a book.
Yeah, write a book. I don't know.
I mean, I'm just glad to hear Panos no longer use the word postures. The word postures for everything the Surface Duo did. And I was like,
different orientations. One day he will pull out like something from his pocket, unfold it, and it'll be a Kindle. Like, you know that's gonna happen.
I mean, to that end, when I asked about the foldable Kindle, and you know, he couldn't really give me a direct answer, obviously. He just said it's an interesting concept, and then he said there's a lot of concepts in their lab. So I wouldn't be, you know, surprised if there was a folding Kindle somewhere in an Amazon lab, you know?
I don't know if anybody's done folding e-ink yet, too. Like, that technology, I don't even know.
Yeah, the display hasn't been studied, mm-hmm. right? Like, people have made folding OLEDs, mm-hmm. but not folding yeah. e-ink tablet panels.
Which is
like
funny, because OLED is so much more complicated. Like, OLED is like, full yeah. color, brighter, higher contrast. It is, like, I've always loved OLED as a sort of, like, magical display technology, and the fact that they could just make it fold, because it was inherently so thin, was kind of wild. I'm looking... E-Ink releases a foldable color 10.3-inch. Yeah, so E-Ink itself, the company that has right. made the technology, has shown off some folding stuff. I can imagine, like, something that just folds into, like, that would be a great actual, like, color folded up into, like, newspaper orientation, fold it flat, you know, fold
Don't
it
even.
Halfway. It's like a book.
You say yes. newspaper, yeah. CUD, CUD in our chat says rollable e-ink screen, rolled the it. Kindle scroll. Can you imagine the scrolled up Kindle would be like a scrolled up newspaper?
I can't imagine with? That. I can't imagine that they would totally do something like that. Okay. All right. Thank you for anything else you want to mention from Amazon stuff, Sherlyn.
Paperwhite
looks nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Paperwhite apparently is the most popular Kindle. It is something you can take in the bathtub. You can, you know, they've upgraded it by making it faster with page turns, as always. I was hanging out with Ray Wong at the Amazon event, and he mentioned that. So one thing that Panos did during his presentation was, like, really show off how fast the pages were flipping, and that it looked like it was scrolling vertically because of the fastness of the flipping. And oh. when we were looking at the Paperwhite, me and Ray was like, there's something about the timing there that seems off to him. And I was like, oh, you're right. So it looks like that even though the page can turn quickly enough, you will still see words from the previous page show up in between words in the new page, right? So there's still that slight refresh rate lag, I think, that's
there's
happening.
Like a ghosting that occurs sometimes
yeah,
on
just
as, yeah.
It's like, it's not even a ghosting. They're like in the same level of intensity yeah. when they both appear at the same time, but it disappears. So when I mentioned this to Panos in my interview later on, he did say that they're still trying to figure out the timing, but it is very fast, I will tell you that. So it's nice to see, and apparently that's something people want. So the Paperwhite having wireless charging is really interesting to me, but that, I mean, that just means you can stick it on a wireless charging stand and have a book cover face you the whole time instead of your phone. So I don't know what that's going to do for the battery health.
You know,
but
you can always plug a cable in and still hold and read a
no,
Kindle.
No, but the wireless stand is so easy. It's like MagSafe, right? Like, I have this Belkin wireless MagSafe stand on my desk. I just plug it there, and it's really great.
It holds
for,
it up.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly.
I assume you can still plug it in, not like normal to charge if you need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, you can still plug it in. And to answer Mark Dell's question in the chat, the color also has wireless charging. I believe so, because it's supposed to be one for one to the Paperwhite yeah, Signature yeah. Edition, and the Signature Edition has the wireless charging. So yeah. Yeah, can you imagine if you like... I mean, you can show book covers as the wallpaper, but for me, I'd rather just draw my own face and have my own face and color e-ink stare at me for a bit.
I think we know. Yes. Sherlyn's apartment is just pictures of her
yeah.
staring at her, staring yeah. at herself.
Got called out by people, eagle-eyed review video watchers when they saw my own selfies in the background.
Not surprised at all. Okay, thank you for all the Amazon talk. Listen, color Kindle, it'll be interesting to see. That won't arrive until the end of October, it looks like October 30th, yeah. but
yeah,
looking forward to seeing further thoughts on that and our full review. So thank you, Amazon. Thank you, Panos. Thank you for everything.
Yeah, it was
again
a really
once
nice
again
chat, honestly
a,
yeah.
a curated Panos experience. Real quick, I want to mention the Meta Quest 3S, which I spent the last week reviewing. And actually, because I had to fly to Austin this week, last weekend, folks, I had to go to my friend's wedding, Mr. Tom Charadar. Congratulations. I used to work with him at VentureBeat. A bunch of media people were there too. I ended up being roped in to shoot his wedding. So it wasn't even like the relaxing away time. I was like, nope, I'm going to bring all my camera gear. I'm going to shoot stuff. But while I was there, I also shot pictures of the Meta Quest 3S. And that is... I guess a testament to what we can do now. Like, I was able to just like throw this thing in my bag, bring it to a hotel, bring it all over the place. And I didn't have to worry about it because it's a relatively small, self-contained VR headset. It just does VR. And that's kind of cool.
I can't believe you brought yeah. a VR headset with you to a wedding.
I brought it. I mean, why not? Why not, Sherlyn? You know who I am. I mean, if you were under the same gun and a freaking Monday morning, 9 a.m. embargo, you would probably have to as well. So also shout out to my new book bag, which is better for lugging a lot of gear. Anyway, this is a $300 VR headset. And I give it a really high score because I think this is such a great entry point into the world of VR. What is interesting here is that it has the same processor, same graphics as the Quest 3, which starts at $500. This thing is replacing the Quest 2, which even last year, you know, the Quest 2 came out in 2020, and I really like that device. But even last year, I was like, that was down to around $300 and sometimes less when you found it on sale. That was still a decent VR experience for a lot of people. Not many people needed the $500 Quest 3. Now all that hardware, the Quest 3 hardware is cheaper. It is using the same display as the Quest 2, mm-hmm. so it's a lower resolution, a lower, smaller field of view as well. At the same time, like, it still feels good. It feels good, snappy VR. It runs the same level of games as the Quest 3, whereas before the Quest 2 would run like lower resolution textures. It would just look a little weird compared to the Quest 3. So they have like power parity now, much better price point. This is using the same controllers as the Quest 3, so they're really smart and responsive. They feel good as controllers, and the hand tracking stuff looks good because it's has very similar face sensors. It doesn't have the depth tracking that the Quest 3 mm-hmm. does, but that doesn't seem to really matter too much for hand controls. It has the same mixed reality cameras, which are hit or miss, but at least you could like look at your phone while without like taking off the headset. I wouldn't live in mixed reality like you could in the Vision Pro. For $300, though, $300, you get some pretty good VR. And there are more games coming out, too. So I feel like even the ecosystem is feeling a bit better. I was playing this game called Maestro, where you pretend to be an orchestra conductor. And that was a lot of fun because I used to do band and orchestra stuff in school. So it definitely felt like being, again, in a room full of people all trying to, like, do music together, except now it uses hand tracking and you, like, grab a pen to work as the baton. And you're doing like accurate conductor movements. It's actually teaching you how to be a conductor, how to like raise certain sections, quiet them down, point to specific sections. That's a really fun VR experience, maybe for band nerds. So did I Am Cat, which we really need to get video of, you know, people at Engadget playing, because it's literally, it's perspective of a cat. Your two controllers are two little kitty paws and you're jumping around, wreaking havoc in a house. There's an old lady that if you make too much noise or if you make too much havoc, she'll whap you with a bat. So you have to watch out for her. But you could also like mess with her too. Throw things at her. You can, there's a litter box to dig in. You can pick up some cat poop and make a sandwich and try to feed it to her. And it's a whole thing. It's a lot of stuff you could do in VR now. I think the experiences in the ecosystem feels better for Quest VR.
Those pictures are nice.
It's cool. It's cool. Yeah. Oh, the pictures are nice of the
pictures of and the review. Yeah.
Yeah. This is from the hotel lobby of the, whatever the Marriott I was at in Austin. But it's nice hardware. It's $300. That's the thing. Good VR, $300. Also still does the Oculus Link stuff, the Quest Link, so you can link it to a gaming PC wirelessly or with a cable. Works really well. I like it. Do you have any, I forget, did you ever get a Quest 3, Sherlyn?
I had a Quest 3. I'm staring at it across the room.
You should use it more. Yeah.
So I want to point out that sometime recently, Alo Yoga also made its own like VR app for the Quest. Like, yeah, I love to get in downward dog position with this big headset strapped to my face. Or imagine Warrior 3. I just needed to put extra weight on my head.
Supernatural VR. Have you tried the Supernatural?
I love Supernatural. I wrote the initial coverage for us for Supernatural VR, and it really burned my quads. It's a very good workout app. I love it.
I got to do more of that too.
But yoga, very specifically, has you, especially depending on the pose you move through, you go upside down sometimes, you're leaning on your head. If you get in a headstand, you're like with the VR headset.
Yeah, that's cool. Do they have like optimized yoga poses for VR? Like
I'll yoga bet they VR, thought through like, it. And yeah, it's probably not the heaviest like acrobatic flows, right? It's probably like a very vinyasa or like a very like chill evening stretchy, you know, agility more than strength sort of flow. So but it's nice to see. And I will point out that your Quest review was like picked up a lot at a lot of different places, so that was really nice to see as well.
Cool. Their product line now is Quest 3S at $300 for I believe 128 gigabytes. But you can buy a 256 gigabyte version for $400. My recommendation is do not buy that one. That actually doesn't make sense at all, because for a little bit more, you get the Quest 3. And the Quest 3 has 512 gigabytes of storage now at $500. It has better lenses, and that is noticeable. So the Quest 3 has pancake lenses, which are flatter, thinner. If you ever look at a VR headset and you see concentric circles, those are called Fresnel lenses, and those are what older, cheaper VR headsets used to use. The Quest 3S has Fresnel lenses, which leads to artifacting and ghost lights, god rays, as they call them. Basically, VR artifacting, you'll get more of on the 3S. You don't get that on the Quest 3. And comparing the two directly in some things, like Maestro, it looks so clean in the Quest 3 because those lenses are just so much better. So if you care about image quality a little more, the Quest 3 is also high resolution. You know, has the depth sensor, which I think works better for the mixed reality stuff, although I didn't notice a huge difference. If you need more storage, if you just plan to be buying a lot of games and storing them, because there are a ton to choose from now, then don't get the 256 gigabyte 3S. Does not make sense. Get the Quest 3 or wait for it to go on sale. How about that? Let's move on to other news, which just feels like an afterthought from Apple. Hey, there's a new iPad mini, and they just dropped a press release one morning. We're like, okay, here, deal with it.
I'm happy there wasn't a whole other event for this.
I don't want more events, but also, come on, Apple. Like, we were all sitting here waiting for, like, the inevitable, like, actual iPad event. So it does feel weird to be like, let's just drop this. Let's let the, the pros, like, just feast on this news for a couple weeks until we have more iPad news and MacBook news. But yeah, iPad.
They also dropped it on the day the Amazon event was happening.
Oh, so
the
maybe
Amazon
that's
event
it.
Happened the day before.
No, maybe well, that's the, part of it.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I don't know if they caught wind, right? But Amazon, like the iPad mini was announced, and then the next day, all of the embargoed info about the Amazon Kindles went out. So, it's interesting timing for sure.
So this is the iPad mini 7, 7th gen.
And there's not that much different about it, right?
I mean, it's a new chip, so it's going to be ready for Apple Intelligence. And I feel like they're slowly going to have to do this throughout their entire product line. But yeah, 17 Pro starts at $499 for 120 gigabytes of storage. But now you have to think, how much is the Kindle ColorSoft? I believe it was under $300, right?
Yeah, it was $280, the Kindle ColorSoft. Okay.
I mean, that's almost half the price of this thing, so I could see that justification. But then you can only do one thing with the Kindle ColorSoft, and yet... you could still read books and do color stuff on an iPad, but it's filled with all those distracting games and media and whatnot. So,
and
do you think that
Apple Intelligence and
Apple
a camera.
Intelligence and a camera? Do you think that argument still stands, Trillin? Like for you personally, if you wanted to just sit down and read something, you had to buy with your own money. Would you rather go for the ColorSoft? I hate saying that name, or do something like the iPad Mini, which is also a 7-inch screen but does a ton more.
Yeah, I like the idea of a tablet dedicated to reading. However, I do more of my reading on my phone's Kindle app than anywhere else. So I guess, you know, practically, I'm the sort of person that might accidentally go, you know, spend money on this thing thinking I would use it and then just let it rot in a drawer somewhere. I will say me and Valentina Paladino on our team were like, I love the iPad mini. I will buy one if they just do these few things. And some of our wish list items were like improvements to the screen and, you know, like, and I don't think any of that actually happened. I mean, storage, yes, Steve.
So it's an 8.3-inch screen, but the screen itself is still 326 PPI. So it's because it's such a small screen, like they could bump up like the display tech at some point, but it's like they're not doing that with the iPad
Air.
What was
the refresh rate on this one?
It's still 60 hertz. They're not, this is Apple. They're not, nothing beyond the Pro devices gets better refresh rate. And I feel like that's the thing I'm waiting for. But also,
I want the iPad Mini Pro.
It's just a tiny little tablet. It's just a little baby. And it does tablet stuff. Would you justify, like, for somebody who has, like, maybe the 16 Pro Max iPhone, that is like a 6.7-inch screen? Is a 8.3-inch tablet, would it be worth just having both? Or do you just get yourself like the 10-inch iPad Air or something that makes more sense?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you have the big phone, you don't need the small tablet. You know what I mean? Like it's the big phone is basically the small tablet.
Now things are getting confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just getting closer and closer. You wait till one of them folds. That's really what it is, right? I think
I'm looking at this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like screaming for it to be folded. I think the bezels are still a little
They look so chunky. Yeah.
I like having the space to like grab onto without accidentally triggering on-screen elements, right? And I love to play games. So now the way I use the iPhone 16 Pros that I have still is the 16 Pro Max is my gaming device. The 16 Pro is my, like, I use it everywhere, I think, because it's just easier to type on. But I don't like, I still don't like the iPhone 16 Pro's battery life. Now that I'm like almost a month in, actually a full month and a and something in, I cannot, I still, I find the battery life on the 16 Pro so annoying. And I'm
are you still refusing to charge in the middle of the day when you can?
Well, when I can is the key here. And often I can't. Like yesterday when I was at the Amazon event, went in 10, I unplugged probably closer to like 8:30. And then like the whole day I was stuck at this place and like I was at 30% at the end of the event. You know what I mean? It was just like, come on. Yeah,
it's rough. It's rough. I get it. I mean, you're out there doing things like also in some of those rooms, like the reception's bad. So like the phones are fighting harder to get reception and stuff.
I was using it for recording all the presentation things and interview things and then taking all the photos. So,
get
so
there's some a battery lot of work packs, I'm putting
Yeah, come Mark on. Dell says get one of those MagSafe batteries.
That's what we were all telling you. Yeah.
But I don't, why would I want to add bulk? I can't, I don't even want to use a case. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not that big. Like, first of all, you only put it on like when you're not actively, like it's sitting somewhere. Like, if you're not actually holding the phone, it's not that bad. And I find it so much easier than just like plugging in the case. It charges wirelessly. So it charges it charges as it can.
Oh, it's not as fast think as like about a thing. It. Oh, think about
it. Or just get a plug-in charger. But anyway, iPad mini. There's a new iPad mini. I still love the form factor. New colors, I guess, like limey. What are let's name
There's
these colors.
Blue, pink, space blue, gray, purple.
Bluey puke. I don't know what's this one in the middle. They're calling that Starlight. That's
Starlight is their usual. Yeah, they usually call it Starlight. It's space gray, blue, purple, and Starlight are the
purple does not look purple. Purple looks like
I thought it was pink. Is they like ran out of ink situation again, right? Like they said that the colors on the iPhone 16 base models are so nice that they probably ran out of printer ink and need to get more from HP again.
Okay. It's cool that there's new iPad mini. I feel like
iPad mini color soft.
Color soft. Yeah, soft boys. Tesla also had a Cybercab event, so this may feel like old news, but it happened like I think pretty much last Thursday.
Yes.
It seems like they announced this thing. What is funny is that the film director Alex Proyas, who I really appreciate, like he has done a lot of cool movies like Dark City. He also did the Will Smith iRobot movie, and on Twitter he was like, "Hey Elon, nice designs you got there." And he pointed to like the designs of that movie where the thing looked exactly like the Cybercab, looked exactly like the stupid cyber van. What is it? What are they calling the other one? Cyber.
Wasn't there a cyborg?
There are the cyborgs that they already did, which they were there handing out drinks, but everybody reported that they were actually being controlled remotely.
Human.
So they weren't actually.
Oh.
They were like remote controlled thingies.
Okay. But cyber the idea taxi?
The idea of the Cybercab is that. These are going to be supposedly cheap devices that can travel the roads. People can buy them for below $30,000. He says everything we say here is like a ticket with a huge grain of salt. He showed one. It doesn't have a steering wheel. It doesn't have a charging port. It charges inductively. So like on like a platform or something, because we all know wireless charging is so fast and that's exactly what you want for a cab. I could see that in a parking lot, like in parking lots, if you could just park somewhere and like let a fleet of devices slowly charge, that could be make it useful. But I don't think this will actually be a thing.
The Robo Van.
Did they call it Robo Van?
Is it the Robo Van? Edmunds.com.
Yes.
MotorTrend.com.
Briefly introduce
Tesla
the Robo
Van.
The
God,
Robo
there's so
Van,
many different names.
Which looks like a really Robo looks Van. Like the thing from. Let me just get that tweet up there. We're looking at the Alex Proyas tweet now. It's just like, hey, he was like, Elon, can I have my my designs back? And we see the robots, which look similar to the robots. But like the cyber van, which is just very much big honking. Looks like a, I don't know how you describe it, like an iron almost, but very similar curvy thing. The car with the big round wheels, similar shape. And
it's like the top of the Darth Vader helmet. kind of.
Sort of. People were pointing out like some of these designs go back to like future, you know, sci-fi stuff from the 30s and 40s. Sure. But it does seem like Elon saw this one movie and was just like, I'm going to pull a lot of design frameworks from here. So, yeah.
I mean, Elon Musk has been just trying to make science fiction real for the longest time, right? Like that's... Mm-hmm.
That's his whole deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, to his credit, like Tesla itself was a good thing. SpaceX has accomplished quite a lot, but he has just had this right-wing turn, which makes me take, I cannot believe anything he's saying at this point. Also, speaking of not believing companies anymore, so last week we talked about data centers and kind of like what they're doing to the environment, what they're doing to the power grid and water usage in towns and stuff too. We also talked about nuclear becoming more of a thing because Microsoft said that it was going to, you know, basically turn part of Three Mile Island back on to power its data centers. Now we've got news that Amazon is planning to build small modular nuclear reactors to reach agreements in Washington and Virginia. These are a new type of nuclear reactor, which are easier to manufacture, basically, and easier to deploy. They don't require the big tower, the big like water tower things that you see in other nuclear plants. Google also announced plans to do something very similar with another company. They were talking about Kairos Power, so they also have plans for that. This is a complicated topic, and I'd love for us to have like a deeper discussion about nuclear at some point. But hey, at the very least, it's not them like killing more of the existing grid and basically churning more coal and pumping out more natural gas to power these things. At least we're not having that. I feel like that's a good thing, but who knows what's going to happen here. We should have seen a lot of this nuclear stuff being tested long, long ago. You had some news from Google, Sherlyn, that you want to mention. Android 15 is rolling out on more devices.
There's quite a lot of news, actually, that Google has been just
dumping.
You know, they took a pause last week and then they did it again this week and they don't really know. I think just Google is such a huge company that they always have a lot of news to share. So this week there was a bunch of software news from the Android and Pixel teams. Android 15 is starting to roll out on Pixel devices. We've got some Pixel feature updates, as well as Google Shopping was getting some new features. We've got Google Flights, I think, was getting some updates as well. It's you know, slowly but surely, you know, they're improving their product. So Google's news cadence is what I'm trying to talk about here, which is that instead of releasing feature or like major platform updates once a year, they're just doing it across the year. We've said this a lot before in this podcast. We know this is how Google's going to do it soon, but I don't know if it's better or worse for news people. But anyway, yeah, if you've been a Google user, there's some improvements there headed your way soon.
And a lot of it's not like super exciting or important anymore. Like clearly all these companies do not care as much about, hey, more updates for our OS versus like we got new AI stuff.
AI, baby!
AI like, all the way. Analog, the retro device company, has officially announced the Analog 4K, which is a FPGA device. I'll talk more about what that is, but it's basically a box that can perfectly, as they say, perfectly reconstruct the Nintendo 64's chip and just let you play N64 games. Looks really cool. I want to point people to our coverage here from our executive editor, Aaron Soporis, who goes deep into the tech behind it and how people use FPGAs. What is cool is, you know, FPGAs, field programmable arrays, let you run stuff that used to run on older chips without emulation. It is sort of a way of reconstructing the way a chip itself works. So it's like a hardware level reconstruction of old tech rather than emulation, which is just trying to like do it by software, which can lead to all sorts of issues. So this looks cool. I don't know if
So I will admit this. Aaron was trying to save me some work because I've been swamped, and so he had someone else edit this. Uh-huh. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what the hell. And he was like, do you know Analog? And I was like, I know they make like gaming handhelds or consoles. He was like, this is more of the N64. And I was like, I tuned it out. And then now looking at the pictures finally, I was like, oh, it's the cartridge thing. And I'm like excited. I'm like, yes, I want to blow into those things.
Yeah, it's the cartridge thing.
And yeah, it looks like so much fun. And it's, yeah, definite nostalgia here.
Definite nostalgia. Uh-huh.
A quick tangent. I joined a new subreddit last night and it's like Amazon budget finds or something. And they were showing off this like gaming console that you can buy that has all these like old school games and you can emulate all manner of old nostalgic handhelds.
It's all trash. It's almost always trash. Yeah. They're all like little, you know, little.
I'm so tempted.
Little emulation boxes. But this thing, I mean, the hardware itself looks cool. I will say the Nintendo 64 is far from my favorite Nintendo console. But I did love my time with, you know, Zelda 64 and everything. I love what they did with the controller here because it does look like the N64 joypad, but not the. Not the freakish three-prong controller, which you sometimes had to hold in the middle to play GoldenEye, and I never learned how to do that, so it was just never fun to me. This hardware looks cool, though.
Yeah. I will point out that, yeah, the story is doing well for us, and in large part because, and I really want to shout this out, Aaron is one of those people who, like, goes, like, as part of our team, is the, like, one of the unsung heroes. He, like, knows a lot, writes really well, and just is killing it at bossing up the team, and nobody really knows who he is, and I think that's the way he likes it, but I'm going to, like, out him right now. Like,
Aaron is super nerd.
Such a smart genius. I hate to admit it, but, yeah.
You hate to admit it? I mean, yeah. Let's also, real quick, Sonos announced the Arc Ultra, which is a $999 upgrade to the Arc. That was their high-end soundbar. Apparently, this one does much better bass than before, so a lot of speech enhancement tools. There's also a new Sub 4, their most advanced subwoofer to date, which looks really cool. I've been testing the Arc for a bit, and that is an incredible sounding soundbar. Has Atmos too, so it does positional audio really well. So cool for Sonos. For anybody who's looking for a high-end soundbar, you really can't go wrong with this, although I would just say look for a refurbished version of the original Arc, unless you really want the newest thing.
Thanks a lot, Sonos, for also dropping this on iPad Mini and Amazon Day.
People are just dropping news and not telling us. It's sort of like how Nintendo dropped the news about Alarmo last week. And let's move on to what we're working on, because I'm working on my thoughts review of the Nintendo Alarmo thing. I can give some first impressions here. And it sure is a Nintendo alarm clock, I think, for better or worse, right? It really hits the nostalgia feels of like, oh, I love those Zelda sound effects. I love all this. I love this vibe. And there are some things where like, what the hell are you doing, Nintendo? For example, there's no like companion app to it. So to connect it to Wi-Fi, it has a big dial at the top. You got to go dial, twist your entire Wi-Fi password. So thankfully, I have a password that's all
like a rotary phone,
like a rotary phone. But what if you had special characters in your password tree?
Yeah,
what if you had upper and lowercase characters? That it would take you minutes. It would take you a while, and it's a really annoying process to dial it in, literally. Nintendo, make an app. In fact, websites with QR codes, which you do use later on in the setup process for some of this stuff, they do use that, but not for connecting to Wi-Fi. It's just a really Nintendo move. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved how Nintendo makes Wi-Fi so easy to.
There's things Nintendo does that are just like, you're great, you're so creative and fun, and then it's also like, what year is this? Do you not know how to make like a new consumer product that connects to the internet? It's really cool, you know, it's a $100 thing, but expect some Nintendo frustration. But then you get stuff like sleepy sounds from your favorite games that can help you go to sleep. Although I've been using the Zelda one. And the Zelda one has a little bit of the musical cue that happens when the Blood Moon happens. That does not put me to sleep. In fact, that actually raises my anxiety and makes me want to get up and be ready for the Blood Moon. I don't want that in an alarm clock. But Alarmo's cool. Check out my full review. It's going to be coming later this week if everything, you know, goes on track. Anything you want to shout out, Sherlyn?
No, I mean, most of my stuff is like that sort of behind the scenes stuff. I will be working on the Engadget review recap this week, and lots of little like other planning stuff. Oh, holiday gift guide work is underway. So I cannot wait till y'all see our recommendations this year. I wanted to shout out things that were happening around Engadget this week. In addition to your Quest 3S review, there was another product called 3S. It was the DJI Air 3S. It's a drone that Steve Dent on our team calls nearly faultless. He really likes this thing. Steve did review for us the DJI Neo. I think it was last week or this. And
that was the $200 baby,
the
right?
$200 drone that I am really intrigued by. But I will point out that I was like, Steve, can you like tell me how this sounds? Because you say it's noisy, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, it sounds like a Banshee.
That's all drones. All drones will sound like that.
Yes, yeah. but you know, given Steve's experience with so many drones, and according to him, the DJI Neo is one of the like noisiest ones. And so, yeah, this one sounds like a Banshee. The Air 3S obviously has sound as well, but it's more high quality drone. You're going to get like more sturdy. I believe stabilization was one of the things that he was impressed by. And this has LiDAR, which helps it with nighttime use. It was not great always at avoiding obstacles. So sometimes it would get lost in a tree while it's following you. But otherwise, it sounds like Steve really, really liked this thing. I'm not going to be buying this, but I want a DJI Neo.
You don't want a companion drone to shoot all your like footage, Sherlyn?
You know, I need those high quality DJI drone selfies for sure. So yeah, I mean, that's stuff that's happening around in Gadget is really stuff that's happening to me. So that's what I'm working on.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's move on to our pop culture picks of the week. You had something, Sherlyn, that you really could not contain yourself to talk about.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So I have two picks this week. I really should be saving them, but whatever. So I watched, so this is the easy, not so controversial pick first, which is I watched Caddo Lake, that new movie that M. Night Shyamalan is involved in but didn't direct. It's about Caddo Lake. Yeah, C-A-D-D-O Lake. Uh-huh. It's on HBO or Max.
Literally never heard about this. And I'm a Shyamalan super fan.
Yeah, it's
fan,
like
so
a out of nowhere. Yeah, mm-hmm. Out of nowhere it just burst on the scene. And I was like, okay, I'll watch it. And it's a really interesting, I think it's a very interesting, like, mind-twisty story that has, like, some M. Night Shyamalan vibes, but really it's about these people who live in, I don't want to say what state, I don't know for sure. It's like swampy areas. And then there's a middle of this like swamp. There's this like area that when the water recedes, there's some shenanigans going on. And it's really interesting, very twisty and turny. I really enjoyed it. Then my more controversial pick.
Okay, I'm ready.
And it is controversial. You tell me if it's controversial. But I watched for the first time this older movie this weekend.
From the 90s.
Not the 90s. The noughties or the 10s. Uh-huh. Anyway, have you heard of this movie called Apocalypto?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
From the 2000s.
So it's
even newer than the 90s. You're calling it an older
film. Yeah, that's what I said. It's from the noughties. So it's old to me. Because I didn't watch it when it was released. But Apocalypto is like, wow, it's a really gripping, extremely well-acted movie that I was like drawn in from the beginning. Now, I'm not one to watch like very gritty, you know, Passion of the Christ type movies. And I mentioned Passion of the Christ because it's somewhat related. They were both directed by Mel Gibson.
Yes, yes.
And that's why it's controversial, I think, Mel Gibson.
And this is post Mel Gibson's like freak out and like his
whole it was post. Yeah.
It was so he made Passion of the Christ and then he made Apocalypto. I will say this movie rules. Like it absolutely rules as an action movie. There are shots of this movie I still think about. Wild. There's a point where the lead character is like running away from danger and he's like sewing up a wound as he's running. Yeah. Just like it's a badass movie. Mel Gibson is a good filmmaker, but goddamn, he's also a piece of crap. So
that's where it's controversial, right? Apocalypto, I think, is undeniably a really good film. If you haven't seen it, I can't remember where I saw it, if it was Prime Video or like a Plex thing, but I watched it with ads. Mm-hmm. And it's this depiction of Mayan, a time in Mayan history that, you know, there's some human sacrifice in the story. And like, I saw it as this, you know, progress from very, let's use modern terms, so like suburban life moving into like small town life or city life and then moving into big city life, right? There's mm-hmm. this sort of journey and you see how the human nature evolves as it gets closer and closer to capitalism. In my opinion, that's the metaphor that was being painted. Obviously, everyone can interpret it any way they want.
It wasn't really capitalism there, but yeah.
It wasn't capitalism, but it was like when you put a lot of people in one space together, when people have more
the
resources, when they have more things compared to when they have huts.
The constraints of civilization.
And they're sharing meat. Right.
This movie ruled. I would love to rewatch this movie.
It was really good. And it stayed with me. This movie really stayed with me. Mark Dell in our chat says, sounds great. Human sacrifice is my favorite.
Human sacrifice. I think their shots were like, somebody's at the top of like the sacrifice altar and the camera goes up above him and everybody is like, it's beautiful. He's a tremendous filmmaker who is unfortunately a piece of human garbage. So there is that. And I've seen other Mel Gibson movies by other controversial directors too. So it's a shame. It's a shame because he was like, speaking of Shyamalan, like I loved him in Signs and so many other things.
Right.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Sherlyn?
No, that's the two. And then I will be taking a break soon. So y'all might not hear me on the podcast for a little bit. So take those two and stay with them.
Sure. I want to mention real quick The Franchise, which is a new satire series. It's on HBO Max right now about a superhero franchise. Very much a satire about the MCU. The show is co-created by Armando Iannucci, a director and writer I love because he made shows like Veep and The Thick of It.
The Thick of It's great.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. So it has that sort of like really sharp insight. It is really raunchy. Like people are swearing like nothing. Also has a really tremendous cast too. So I think you'd enjoy this, Sherlyn, because you understand the sort of like grind of a superhero franchise thing.
I love it. Yeah.
Cast includes people I love, like Hemish Patel from Station 11, Aya Cash from You're the Worst, Jessica Hines, who I really would love to see more in shows. She was the co-star in Spaced, the show that Edgar Wright and Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg all did together way back in the day before the Shaun of the Dead and their whole rise. So I love Spaced. That was a good thing. Fantastic show. Check out The Franchise. It's on Max right now. Also playing, real quick, Metaphor ReFantazio, the new Atlas RPG, which I believe Aaron was also working on some sort of review about that thing.
Someone was.
Yeah, somebody's working on it. Yeah. Matt Smith at Engadget has done a preview of it, too. So really cool-looking Atlas RPG. If you want to scratch that Persona itch, it's a really fascinating game to play. So I'm really digging the style and everything about it. Maybe not something I'd recommend to you, Sherlyn, because it goes hardcore in the craziness. Because it's also, the game is called Metaphor, and they're trying really hard about like setting up the metaphors of what the story is really about. It's about, you know, it's a fantasy world where there are multiple races. These giant creatures called humans appear and start destroying everything, and they're monsters, and they're just destroying the world. These humans are evil. It's very much like Attack on Titan, too, like with giant human monster type stuff. So, yeah, check out Metaphor ReFantazio if you like RPGs. I'm playing it on PC and also a bit on Steam Deck. It's good stuff.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, Blue Sky, Mastodon, everywhere, and a podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you have any ideas for alternatives to a Diet Coke that are actually healthy, please send them to me. I am at Sherlyn Low on Twitter /X. That's CHERLYNNLOW, or Sherlyn Instagram on Threads, because I actually don't check Twitter very much. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. This man is kind of the tech Rizzler.